Frank DeFord joins us on Sports Byline USA, and when I saw the story that he had written his memoir called Overtime, My Life as a Sports Writer, I knew I had to have him back on the show because he is one of the most celebrated sports writers in America, award-winning sports writer for Sports Illustrated, and, of course, also a fine correspondent for HBO's Real Sports. You know, when one has to write about their own life, it sometimes can be a little bit difficult. How hard was it for you, Frank, to sit down and write about yourself?
Well, the hard part, Ron, is you lose perspective. I think I've got pretty good news judgment, so that if I'm doing a story on Mr. X, I have a pretty good idea if I like something about Mr. X, then the average reader's going to like it, you know? But this time, I'm thinking, is that really interesting to other people, this part of me? It was hard for me to decide which part of me was really going to interest the reader. So it's different. It's just unique, and you also get self-conscious, unless you have total vanity like Donald Trump or something, and I'm not that far gone. then it's tough.
How would you evaluate your overall life? I mean, now that you've had a chance to reflect on it, at least up till this particular point, and think about all you've seen, all you've done, and what you do. I mean, does it blow your mind a little bit, Frank?
Oh, I think I'm, you know, so lucky, just absolutely blessed. Nobody gets through completely unscathed. Sure, I would have liked to have done this and liked to have achieved that, but I tell you, when I look at it from an overall point of view, I am just one very, very lucky guy. It's been a ball. How many people get to do, first of all, what they want to do all their life? And that's me. You know, that by itself is just, wow, terrific.
Let's go back to Baltimore. Tell me about that childhood.
See, that's the other thing. Now, I had a wonderful childhood. Now, that didn't help the memoir, though. You know, you want to have a rotten childhood to set the memoir up. And then people can say, what a great guy. He came from nowhere. He had to overcome this and this and this. Well, I didn't have to. I had a happy home. You know, we weren't rich, but we were comfortable. You know, everything went fine. I liked my father. I liked my mother. They liked each other. So, from the very beginning, I think I've been a lucky guy. And I really do believe this, that the time that I've lived, I was born in the end of 1938. What a fabulous time to be an American, you know. I didn't ever had to fight in the wars. And I saw, you know, all the good stuff all the way through. I'm not talking just about sports. I'm talking about, you know, the American century. So I was in the right place at the right time, any way you want to look at it.
Was there a particular athlete, a particular game, a particular moment in sports when you were young that really stays with you today, the thing that really imprinted sports on your mind, Frank?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Baltimore, and you just jump right away to Johnny Unitas, handing the ball to Alan Ameche, running through the line. Colts beat the Giants in the greatest game ever played. I mean, that particularly that was important because being a kid in Baltimore, when I first was a young kid, we had nothing. We didn't have any professional football. We didn't have any professional baseball. We didn't have anything. We didn't even have any college sports in Baltimore. And so it meant even more when we had the championship. I mean, there's just no question about it. The Orioles mattered, but the Colts won first. And Unitas will be in my mind forever and ever and ever.
How did you pick Princeton to go to?
Well, my father was a Princeton man. And in those days, and I'm not, this is not me blowing any smoke, it was not that hard to get into Princeton. Today, they would not even allow me to apply for the place. But in those days, particularly if you had if you were what was called a legacy, which is what I was, in other words, my father went there, and you had your nose clean, and I'd had a pretty distinguished high school career, even if my grades weren't any good. And hey, Princeton's an awful nice place to go to, right? It wasn't like I was going to East Cupcake Community College, so it was a natural place for me to go to, and I was very lucky that I went there.
I'm going to make an observation here, and if I'm wrong about this, Frank, feel free to correct me, but I waited 2 years before I went to college, went only 2 years, took only the courses I was interested in, because I wasn't interested in getting a degree, but becoming educated and smarter about the things I had an interest in. And yet, when I look at your career and what all you've done, I'm just wondering, did Princeton add anything to it, or was it just someplace you bided your time for a period of time until you found your calling?
I think if there's one mistake I made in my life, I wasted Princeton. I mean, think of all the minds that were there. Think of all the courses I could have taken. Think of all the things I could have learned. And what did I do? I basically wrote. I wrote plays, I wrote for the Daily Princetonian newspaper and became the chief of it, and then I goofed off. And, you know, the third thing I did was go to class just enough to get by. And but, you know, they say youth is wasted on the young, and that was a classic case of that. I just wanted to get out and write. That's what I wanted to do. And so I blew a beautiful opportunity. But I tell you, you got to sort of suck in a certain amount just being there, you know, being around so many smart people. And so in that sense, I guess it helped me, but I sure didn't help myself. That's for certain.
Something had to rub off on you, right?
It rubbed off. I guess that's a good word, rubbed off. You couldn't, you know, you'd bump into enough smart stuff. But basically, I didn't take advantage of it. And then, you know, that's, as you say, that's from being a dumb kid. That's what people forget sometimes, Ron, how young these athletes are. You know, and I was essentially like a young athlete. All I wanted to do was to write. Just like a lot of these kids, all they want to do is play football or play basketball or whatever. And so I have a great sympathy for them. I understand. When you have that kind of ambition and you have a certain amount of talent, you blow the other stuff off. And that's what I did, and that's what a lot of these star athletes do.
Coming out of Princeton, you obviously had a focus because you went for interviews at Time, Inc., and you were immediately labeled, and I don't know why you were labeled this, maybe you can enlighten me, not very bright. And you
that was
to...
my grades, Ron. That was my grades. you had to do was read my transcript.
You had to carry around a folder with your resume and those words emblazoned on it, but you already knew you wanted to be at SI, right?
I wanted to be at SI because I thought it was a really well-written magazine, and I didn't want to be the star magazines at Time Incorporated then were Time and Life, and I didn't want to have, I had no interest in either one of them whatsoever. So the only place I wanted to work was Sports Illustrated, so when these people were kind of looking down their noses at me, you know, I was an arrogant kid, and I told them I didn't have any use for them either. All I wanted to do was work at Sports Illustrated. And so that worked to my advantage because the word got back to Sports Illustrated. This, you know, snotty, arrogant kid only wanted to, you know, wanted to work there. So they liked me. And that was a large part, I think, of why I got hired, because I said, hey, I want to work for you. And at that point, Sports Illustrated was the little man on the totem pole.
What were those early days at SI like?
Oh, well, first of all, of course, for me to be in New York, 23, 24 years old, in the 1960s, with the world at my feet, so to speak, you know, with a little money in my pocket for the first time, it was fabulous. If you watch Mad Men on television, it was a lot like that, because magazines and advertising are sort of first cousins to each other. There was, you know, a lot. It was like still being in college, only getting paid, you know. And sometimes it was amazing that we got the magazine out every week. It was a lot of fun, but the people were so talented that, and there were so many of them, that we could overcome all the drinking and smoking and running around that we did to get out of Good Magazine. It was just for me to be at the foot of these guys who had been war correspondents. Remember now, we were only 16, 17 years old removed from the World War II. And these guys who had been in the war, the guys who had lived through the Depression, who, you know, the newspaper stories they could tell. It was fabulous. It was just absolutely fabulous.
Frank DeFord is with us. I want you to check out and please read this book. It's called Overtime, My Life as a Sports Writer. He has won an Emmy, a Cable Ace Award, a George Foster Peabody Award, elected to the Hall of Fame in the National Association of Sportscasters and Sports Writers. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline.